Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars is the first chapter in my book. Once you read that, you will have a complete understanding of what's happening in one very important area. And you will get an understanding of what the elite think of us, the common man, the mass of ordinary, everyday people, which is what most of us really are. We're all special in our own way, but we are part of the masses of people. They believe that we are cattle, that we do not use our intellect, that we are easily manipulated, that we will not solve the problems of the world because we are greedy scumbags. And because of that, we are nothing but stakes on the table for those who will use their intellect. And until we change that, they're going to treat us like cattle. And I've got to tell you right now, on a daily basis, we prove them right.
Today we're going to talk about the Great Reset again, some more, going a little deeper. Today's part four, if you're keeping track. We're going to talk about Bill Cooper, the now deceased triple OG of conspiracy theorists, author of Behold a Pale Horse, my personal red pill. And I don't agree with everything Bill Cooper says, but you know, he's one of the originals, one of the legends. And a lot of the stuff he said turned out to be true, as you will find out today. Now, if you are new to the show, you gotta go back and listen to The Great Reset Part 1. It's a 2-hour show I did. It was a little book club. Globalist Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum out in Davos, Switzerland. He did, and my German accent is being perfected. Each time I use these terms, gets a little better. But part one, we went through his book, COVID-19, The Great Reset, because what I saw in the truther community was the repeated mantra about the Great Reset is the globalist, you know, communist, Marxist agenda. And I wanted to fact check that, because that's a big statement to make. And I usually don't get into the political stuff, and I won't after this. Like, this isn't a regular thing for me, trust me. I already saw some folks on the Patreon comment threads showing their dislike of the political stuff, and I agree. I'm right there with you. But this is a big deal. This is a big deal. So in part one, we covered the whole book and the ideas presented about why there's going to be a new normal. And then in part two, I had a part two and a part three that were both premium contents, if you will, that you'll only be able to get if you're on patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or rockfin.com/creator/Isaac. Links in the show notes. Rockfin's the new network I just put my stuff on, if you're unfamiliar. I also have a second podcast I do called Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist on there you can check out. But part two, we talked about another one of Klaus Schwab's books called The Fourth Industrial Revolution. And the very short version of that is that basically we are creating the magical age, the Aeon of Horus, Aleister Crowley spoke of, manifesting the physical reality from the mind. We are, in fact, materializing the spiritual world. Whereas the third industrial revolution, we went from making the material go to the spiritual realm. When we put your compact disc into MP3 format and you stole it from Napster on your mom's computer or whatever. Then in the Great Reset Part 3, again, only on the supporter feeds, we went over the World Economic Forum's 8 points. And reviewed a 1-hour analysis of this idea from Jay Dyer that he posted on Alex Jones's InfoWars. And I said, could this be? Come on. You're pulling my leg, Jay. You're being extreme. You're fear-mongering, Jay Dyer. And he wasn't. Turns out it's all true. So what does that leave us with? Well, it leaves me with one more point to make, and that's to go to Bill Cooper, to cement this idea, because I'm a very skeptical guy. In fact, I barely call myself a truther. I don't like the truthers, to be honest. A bunch of crybabies. Just snowflake crybabies. Very sensitive. You can't talk about ideas with them anymore. They lose their mind. They talked about Trump derangement syndrome. Well, there's COVID derangement syndrome and globalist derangement syndrome. Like, there's no conversations to be had anymore. So I'm officially no longer a truther. F them, guys. To cry babies. Go home. And this is stuff I talk about on Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist, because when I make posts online, everyone gets their panties in a bunch. And that's okay. It's fine. I like a little lively debate, but good Lord. Anyway, part 4. That's today. That's what we're here to talk about. Bill Cooper. Who's Bill Cooper? You know who Bill Cooper is. This guy's been around forever. The extremely short version of Bill Cooper is that here's a guy who was in the Air Force, I believe, and then Naval Intelligence. He was in Vietnam. He said he saw some UFOs. He saw some documentation suggesting that there was this basically globalist agenda. Basically. And he was always questioning whether or not UFOs were real or if that was a disinformation psyop. But, you know, we're not here to talk about UFOs today. But in his book, Behold a Pale Horse, you will read, and I read this book back in 2002, I believe, 2001, when one of my homies turned me on to this. And it's like the first half is it lays out this idea of a new world order. Then the second half is kind of documentation supporting the idea. But when you read that first half, you will see he lays out, you know, and it's all your sort of usual suspects, right? You got the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg. He spends a fair amount of energy talking about this Jason advisory group that seems to have, I don't know, reduced in prevalence over the years, maybe. But basically, it's this idea you've seen so many times. The Umbrella Group, the Octopuses, Charlie Robinson called it on our show we talked a few months back, if you recall. David Icke talks about it as the spider web. The global cabal, secretly hatching a plan for world domination, a new world order, a one world government, all these things. And in fact, in the book, I didn't realize it, because I haven't read the full book cover to cover in a long time, but I kind of thumbed through it, and I reviewed one of his presentations. Like a 5-hour presentation you can find on YouTube. And in the book, he goes into a little bit of the idea that this is all to worship Lucifer. The Freemasons are in on it. All that stuff. Which I found very interesting, because over the years I've learned a lot about the occult. And that seems to be a very, I don't know, that seems to be an accurate idea. I'm behind that. I believe that. I believe in the Luciferian agenda. Now, in the book, in Behold a Pale Horse, there's a giant section called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Supposedly, this document found on a Xerox printer. And for you young people out there, that was they call it a Xerox. It's a copy machine, right? And I'll read to you from it. Because this is important. And is the document true and legitimate? Maybe. I don't know. When you read it, it kind of doesn't seem like it's real, because the way they talk, like, if these are like the globalists and the elites and the smartest people, I would argue their documents would sound more like the World Economic Forum's documents. Very neutral, very disarming. Whereas, like, in the Silent Weapons Require Words and stuff, like, the people are dumb sheep, you know, and it's like, would they talk like that? I don't know. Anyway, let's read. In the interest of future world order, peace, and tranquility, it was decided to privately wage a quiet war against the American public with an ultimate objective of permanently shifting the natural and social energy, the wealth, of the undisciplined and irresponsible many into the hands of the self-disciplined, responsible, and worthy few. Now, I believe that. I believe the elites look at the lower classes with disdain and think that they're cattle to be used and abused. And if they were good people, and if they didn't deserve this kind of treatment, they would work their way up. They would bootstrap themselves up, which we all know is the big lie. Then in the book, there's a quote from Meyer Amschel Rothschild from 1800s there. "Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws." Now this, I would argue, is part of the cryptocurrency push. If you checked out my show from a couple years ago, we talked about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. It's also in my book, Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. Amazon Audible, pick your poison. But that's what this is all about, I argue, because I think cryptos are very much more traceable than the U.S. dollar. Now, the U.S. dollar is a fiat currency. We all pretend it's worth X amount, since they deviated from the gold standard. Which, again, you go to these old schoolers like Bill Cooper, because he ran a show. He ran a radio show in the 90s. And it was called Hour of the Time. And if you listen to some of those, it's like, what do you call it? Shortwave broadcast radio stuff. You know, he's selling gold and all that stuff. Oh, and in case, let me finish my story about who Bill Cooper is. There's a documentary you can find. I believe it's called Hour of Our Time. And he died in 2001 in November, right? Here's the sequence that's crazy. In like June of 2001, he said on his radio show, and you can find clips of this. I posted it on my Instagram like 2 years ago, if you can find it. He said on the radio that in June or July of 2001, that Osama bin Laden was going to be part of this big psyop against the American public. And don't believe it. Then 9/11 happened, obviously. Then next thing you know, boom. Police kill him. Now the story, they relay the whole story on that little documentary, which you can find on Daily Motion. It's hard to find anywhere really, but it's on Daily Motion. Direct from one of his closest sort of friends and advisors and co-workers there in that little town of Eager, Arizona. They claim that, I mean, it sounded to me like it was a bit of entrapment. They had some undercover cops pretending like they were partying down his road. Bill Cooper went down there with a gun to scare them off. And apparently he shot one in the head at some point. And then they shot and killed Bill Cooper. Now, Bill Cooper was controversial because, was it Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bombers? They listened to his show. And the media glommed onto this and said, oh my God, Bill Cooper is part of a militia. Because Bill Cooper's always talking about Second Amendment rights. And he wasn't really that kind of guy, I don't think. I mean, I'm not an expert on Bill Cooper. But in that little documentary, Hour of Our Time, his friend there asserts that Timothy McVeigh and a friend who, it might have been Terry Nichols, showed up at Bill Cooper's house before the Oklahoma City bombing. And I don't know, there was nothing of significance from the conversation, from what I recall. In fact, I don't think he even liked those two guys. Anyhow, it doesn't matter. He knew something was going down before it went down. You know what I'm saying, baby? And 9/11 went down, and that pushed us into the New World Order stuff. They took him out. And it's a longer story, right? But they did have an arrest warrant. But the Marshals Service went on record and said that he would not be taken alive when they showed up. Because they were charging him with tax evasion? Like, come on. Anyhow, we're here to talk about Behold a Pale Horse. Like I said, there's a 4 or 5 hour, I'll put the link in the show notes, 4 or 5 hour presentation he did, and I have a gang. I got a stack of DVDs that I bought from Hour of the Time. Fun story. I told this one before, but you're going to get to hear it again. So my red pill sequence in 2002, because it was after 9/11. My buddy was like, "You got to read this book." And I said, "Okay." And I found the book, pre-internet era. And by pre-internet era, I mean we didn't have internet on the phones, and it wasn't very useful for those kinds of things. So I found it at a bookstore, bought it. I was like, "Yes, this is great. I love it." I don't know if I believe it, but I love it. It's great. Then, like 2 years later, I met a guy who also knew who Bill Cooper was. You know, and this was really cool back then. This was very Fight Club-ish, because we didn't, you know, you didn't hook into people that knew this stuff too much. And me and him went halvesies on like a 12-disc set on, I think we bought it from hourofthetime.com, and has like all these lectures from Bill Cooper. It's outstanding. Now, if I had a better computer setup, I would rip them to digital and find a place to publish them, but I don't want to screw with Bill Cooper's money, his family's money, because you know, he was married, and I think they had a kid. Yeah, I think they had a daughter, if I'm not mistaken. So I wouldn't do that anyway, but it's important information. But you can find this 4 or 5 hour lecture on YouTube for now. And I'll put the link in the show notes. Now, let's just go through it, right? And what I'm trying to convey here on this episode is that Bill Cooper was warning us of all this stuff in the 80s and 90s. Now, it could be, I mean, it wasn't, and Bill Cooper wasn't like the only guy who ever said this kind of stuff. But it just shows that he was on the pulse of something that turned out to be true 20, 30 years later, 30 years later. Crazy. In the first clip, we'll just for fun, you know, we talks about the microchips getting implanted from the alien abductions, which I found curious because we now know through documentaries like Mirage Men with Richard Doty, who is a OSI agent, that they in fact did these fake UFO abductions of people, and you know, were these microchips used to track and trace? Which, again, those are terms that you'll see with Klaus Schwab's books about tracking and tracing through the blockchain with maybe the vaccine, right? Gates was researching all this back with that Event 201 stuff.
Now, this is very strange because just before these began happening and after we began finding these implants, we began noticing newspaper articles like this. Computer chip implants can help find lost pets, and it goes to outline how this happens. And it tells us that the sheriff's department and the police department in the cities are given electronic equipment to communicate with a satellite that the government has put up. And if you put an implant in your pet's, this satellite can find your pet wherever it is when it's lost, and your local law enforcement people, by tuning into this satellite with their electronic equipment, can tell you where your pet is and go get it. Then, next slide, please. Then you hear Dan Rather on the 6 o'clock news say that the pet implant program has worked so well that 97% of all lost pets that have been implanted are being found and returned to their owners, that you should have your children implanted. He said this in 1989. Then you see in the Los Angeles Times, not the National Enquirer, ladies and gentlemen, the Los Angeles Times on 12-12-89, forecast 10 changes for the coming decade, and one of those 10 changes, number 4 in fact, will become necessary in the future with the availability and widespread use of electrical and chemical implants that will allow 24-hour-a-day control of individuals' behavior. Now, are you beginning to get interested in the abductee experience?
Now, you'll recall that, because surely you were with me when we talked about the stabbies, right? The vaccine controversy shows, parts 1 through 8. If you haven't listened to them, you can get the PDF book of that for free. Go to the show notes. I got a I got a link in there. You can get 4 books for $5. That's a deal I got going for you. But we talked about how Bill Gates was researching how to place quantum ink dots under the skin to prove, to certify someone received an injection, a vaccine. Well, that sounds very similar. They're not embedding a microchip per se, but we're getting there. Now, the Michael Bloomberg, his little media outlet, a.k.a. Mr. Mithra himself, he's already laying the foundations. And notice how why do these globalist elites insist on owning the media outlets? Don't people question everything at this point? Everything's got to get filtered through this big money machine? Why? Why do they want to own the news? I want to deceive you. And I'm always an advocate of, I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think every single thing that's on the news is fake. Not every single thing is fake news. You just got to be cognizant. I would say it's more 80-20. I'm going to read you from Bloomberg.com. Of the 1.1 billion people who lack formal proof of identity, most live in Asia and Africa, and a third of them are children, according to World Bank data. The invisibility isolates them from systems of democracy and social welfare. Men and women fail to find themselves on voter rolls. Boys and girls can't get into schools. Welfare benefits are misdirected. And as Norman realized, healthcare delivery goes awry. It doesn't matter if it's tuberculosis, HIV, or immunizations, he says. In every single case, the fundamental challenge is, can you know who's in front of you and give them the right treatment? So you can see how they justify this, because they're saying, look, everyone's going to get the vaccine, and the problem is, you know, people lose their medical records. How do you prove you got a vaccine unless we put the quantum ink dots in your skin? Unless you get the tattoo. Like, it's turning into Idiocracy, right? Why come you don't have a tattoo? But you see how, and this was my beef with vaccines. They apply third world logic to first world countries, to the masses. Just like in the vaccines, they want to pretend that, like, that cultures that are quite literally playing in the same rivers that they dump their buckets of feces in need the same level of health care and vaccine protection as we do here in the modern world. Right? Oh, I don't know. How could we possibly track if someone gets a vaccine in America unless we permanently mark them with quantum ink dots? Gee, I don't know. Maybe send me an email. How about a piece of paper? A folder of actual paper. And by the way, those ink dots, I think they claim they dissipate over time, which adds more questions as to why even bother. All right, next. He talks about, again, this is like 80s, 90s stuff. Talks about how the Soviets found UFO materials, and this material was constructed on the micro nanoscale level, which is part of what To the Stars Academy and the big alien psyop agenda is claiming today.
Yes, it's in my book. It's the Foreign Broadcast Information Service, Foreign Press Note. Foreign Broadcast Information Service is a division of the Central Intelligence Agency, which monitors foreign broadcasts on radio, television, military, civilian broadcast waves, and gleans information. This entire report, each paragraph is a separate report of flying saucer or UFO reports in the Soviet Union during the period covered by this report, and this report was issued 22 November 1989. You never heard of any. Every paragraph. One of these paragraphs refers to a crashed craft on a hill from which they recovered pieces of technology that were not capable of manufacturing. Next page, please. All of these. Now you see at the top is what they found up here. You look closer so I can read it. Some of the scientists have concluded that the object that crashed into Hill 611 was an extraterrestrial space vehicle constructed by highly intelligent beings. Doctor of Chemical Sciences V. Vysotsky, it's a good thing I'm not Russian, I couldn't talk, stated that without doubt this is evidence of a high technology and it is not anything of a natural or terrestrial origin. He cited the fact that the remnants of fine mesh included bits of thin threads with a diameter of only 17 microns, and that these threads in turn were composed of even thinner strands twisted into braids. Extremely thin gold wires were discovered intertwined in the finest threads, evidence of an intricate technology beyond the present capabilities of terrestrial science, according to this man that I can't pronounce his name. Next slide, please.
But right, what he's saying is that the materials, and this is what they're saying for the To the Stars Academy stuff, they found these UFO materials, and there's no way on Earth to construct something at that level, of on that subatomic sort of level. So he's saying they were doing this in the 80s and 90s. Okay? Very strange, right? I'm just saying this guy was talking about stuff that, you know, like I say, the truthers are always right. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're always right. This guy was right. Fun part, he at one point he says that he doesn't think we'd be in this whole mess if women ran the world. Huh. Who would have thought? An old school boomer conspiracy guy would be so woke. I don't know if I disagree with him. I think men and women run different motivations, right? I think women are more empathic, more emotionally in tune with one another. I'm sure there would be problems if women ran the world too. Just of a different level, different kind, right? Probably different kinds. Nah, I'm not going to walk into that landmine. I just found it interesting that he said that. I was like, oh, who would have thought? You know, you take a look at Bill Cooper and you wouldn't think he would say such a thing. But the media wanted to portray him as this, you know, right-wing militia kind of guy. And he wasn't necessarily that way. He's more complex than that. But you know how America is. We want things black and white, very simple. Move on. Now, next thing he talks about. Okay, here we go. Here's where we get into the globalist agenda stuff. He claims that corporate America is in fact the Council on Foreign Relations, and they're the ones helping cover up the UFOs. The point I'm trying to make here is that he's saying that the CFR is in fact tied into these globalists, and I agree with that, right? Because Klaus Schwab says the World Economic Forum is run by the thousand biggest corporations in the world or whatever.
Bob Exler's idea of what the cover-up structure looks like, he believes wholeheartedly that to have a cover-up of this kind involving this kind of technology, you would have to have full support from what we call corporate America. Now, this would be very easy in this country because who is corporate America? It's literally the Council on Foreign Relations. And I'm going to show you later that not only is this possible, it's probably absolutely right on. Next.
And much like we're going to see in 2021, it's going to be the corporations that decide if you need this stabby or not. It's not going to be the government. I mean, even though President Trump signed H.R. Bill 6666 talking about how the U.S. military was going to be injecting you with Operation Warp Speed, keeping you quarantined inside your home till you did it, it's not going to look like that. It's going to look like corporations and corporate America saying, well, you can not have the stabby, you just can't do anything. Because that's who really runs this piece. You know what I'm saying? That's the oligarchy. That's what your boy Bernie Sanders was saying. He talks about the UFO agenda on this thing, and he rightfully asserts that there's a map. If you go out to Area 51, as I did, me and Jimmy the Jackhammer went out there many moons ago, And you can find the, I've got the full video. I believe it's on the YouTube channel still. I don't really mess with YouTube like that anymore. They're just such a hassle. But if you go to my YouTube channel, Isaac Weishaupt is the user, is the channel name. Link in the show notes. You can find that video. It's a fun time. We went out to Rachel, Nevada. And in fact, when you look in the map, it does say Saucer Mesa. And I noticed that too. And I thought, wow, that really is weird. But he asserts that, he talks about how Project Red Light was flying real UFOs. It was actual pilots flying real crashed UFOs. And they eventually confirmed this with Project Oxcart, which was strange. There's a whole, and in that DVD set that I've got, there was a whole, I think there was two discs on Project Red Light. I'd have to rewatch them. It was many years ago. But to stick with the subject at hand, he goes into this. This is a great clip, and it's going to be like 10 minutes long, okay? 10 minutes long. So hang in there. Grab yourself a little coffee, right? Keep it black. Don't be putting that sugar poison in there. But why do we need a one-world government? This is do not skip this. Do not skip this. If you skip this, you're going to break my heart. It gets better as it goes, okay? That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's 10 minutes long. It's going to get better as it goes. You got to stick through it because this is a very important point to make. And I've been laying this out so far as like, look, Bill Cooper's a legend. Bill Cooper was right about a whole lot of stuff that people thought he was an insano militia guy. And that wasn't the case. He was right about a lot. But this is where we're getting into. Why do we need a one world government? Let's go.
Now, everybody wants to know, why do we have to have a one world government? Why is it that they won't let us have these things that we know will cure disease? Why are they so hard on homeopathic medicine? Why this, why that, why this, why that? It's simple, folks. Once you really get into it, there is no doubt about it, there is a serious population problem. At the end of World War II, or actually during the war, they did a study to try to determine the effect of the returning soldiers from the war upon the economy. What these people who made the study projected was that there was going to be a whole bunch of babies born. They did a study again in 1957, which stated that the exponential increase of the population would ensure that the population would double between 1957 and 1990, and it did. They said that if something wasn't done, the increase in the use of insecticides, toxic chemical waste, effluent sewage, the pollution of the air, the use of fossil fuels, the use of timber, the increased need for raw materials was going to put us in a crisis, because they said that if something wasn't done to stop the growth of the population would double again 28 years from 1990. And it will. And then we will need twice as many trees, twice as many homes, twice as many cars, twice as much oil, twice as much food, twice as much everything. We will be putting twice as much sewage into the earth, twice as much pollution into the atmosphere, twice as much toxic waste material. And the study said, if we don't stop this, if something isn't done, the human race will cause itself to become extinct shortly by or after the year 2000. Some people still didn't believe it. So the Club of Rome was formed secretly by Dr. Aurelio Pacheco in Rome, Italy. He got together a group of elite men and scientists, and they did another study and came up with exactly the same answers. They then commissioned a group of people in the United States at MIT. They put together a team to establish a computer model to determine what can be done to stop this, what can be done to ensure that it doesn't happen again, what can be done to ensure that the human race survives. And the answer is some of the things that I'm going to show you. All of this is in my book. It's thoroughly documented. It's going to really upset some of you, but it's true. The first indication publicly was this book written by Dr. Paul R. Ehrlich. Now, y'all wonder why is Dr. Paul Ehrlich writing these books? That's because his wife, ladies and gentlemen, is a member of the Club of Rome. Next slide. This was copyrighted first in 1968. It was the first indication of the results of the secret studies. This was published by Paul Ehrlich. Next. It says here, probably accurate to say that if all the food produced in the world today were in some sense equally distributed, that everyone would have an adequate diet. Does that mean that those who claim that there is no population problem, only a problem of distribution, are correct? Absolutely not. Population pressures are a product of animals as they exist, not as they might be. If lions ate grass instead of antelopes, the plains of Africa could support many more of them before the plains would be overpopulated. Similarly, the carrying capacity of Earth for saints is considerably higher than the carrying capacity for Homo sapiens. In theory, the problem of human overpopulation could be solved by a reduction in population size or by a change towards more saintly behavior. The current situation of global overpopulation is so serious, and the built-in potential for further population increase is so great, that the only sensible strategy for humanity today is to end population growth and start a population decline as rapidly as is humanely possible, simultaneously striving to achieve a more equitable distribution of the food and other goods of this planet. Limiting births and increasing social justice are not alternative strategies to preserving society. They are, ladies and gentlemen, necessary complements. Next slide. Now, here is the key. In this book, Paul Ehrlich told us that they had already decided on the solution because they had tried zero population growth and we didn't buy it. We didn't buy it. It worked in some small areas, but it didn't work in many, and it certainly didn't work worldwide. This paragraph tells you everything that you ever need to know about what is happening today and will answer a lot of your questions. Basically, then, there are only two kinds of solutions to the population problem. One is a birth rate solution, in which we find ways to lower the birth rate. Didn't work. Didn't work. The other is a death rate solution, in which ways to raise the death rate, war. You ask me about the Middle East? You ask me about what happened to Iran. You ask me about El Salvador. You ask me about Nicaragua. You ask me what's going to happen in the future. This paragraph tells you what's going to happen. Famine, pestilence, find us. They have just shut off the water to all the farmers in the San Joaquin Valley. They produce 50% of all the vegetables that are consumed in this country. Do you believe that's an accident after reading this? Large corporations and banks have been forcing the small farmer out of existence and buying up land which sits fallow. Do you think that's an accident? We have sold all of our grain to the Soviet Union. Do you think that's an accident? There's not 20 days supply of grain in this country if we needed it in an emergency. Now listen to this. The problem could have been avoided by population control, in which mankind consciously adjusted the birth rate so that a death rate solution did not have to occur. He's telling us, ladies and gentlemen, that they have already decided upon it and that it is in effect. Next. The next warning was the limits to growth. This was published by the Club of Rome. Next. The conclusions are, and this is only what they revealed to the public, what they told to the power elite of the world is an entirely different story and is much more radical. If the present growth trends in world population, industrialization, pollution, food production, and resource depletion continue unchanged, the limits to growth on this planet will be reached sometime within the next 100 years. The most probable result will be a rather sudden and uncontrollable decline in both population and industrial capacity. And what they don't say here that they said in the secret report is that the masses of people in the world will result to the overthrow of their government and anarchy will reign as they try to feed themselves and their families and find jobs. It is possible to alter these growth trends and to establish a condition of ecological and economic stability that is sustainable far into the future. The state of global equilibrium could be designed so that the basic material needs of each person on Earth are satisfied and each person has an equal opportunity to realize his individual human potential. Who would suffer the most under such a plan? Not the rich, ladies and gentlemen. They are in control. It's going to be us. Americans consume most of the raw materials in the world. 50% of the energy supply is consumed in this country. We pollute the earth more than any other nation. It is us who are going to have to go back and live like our ancestors did, and they're going to make us if we don't learn how to do it on our own. I'd rather be a volunteer than a slave. I don't know about you. If the world's people decide to strive for the second outcome rather than the first, the sooner they begin working to attain it, the greater will be their chances of success. And down in the last paragraph, something really important. These conclusions are so far-reaching and raise so many questions for further study that we are quite frankly overwhelmed by the enormity of the job that must be done. We hope that this book will serve to interest other people in many fields of study and in many countries of the world to raise the space and time horizons of their concerns and to join us in an understanding and preparing for a period, and listen to this because they're not kidding, it's coming very soon, for a period of great transition, the transition from global to global equilibrium.
Now we're going to break that down. We're going to break that 10 minutes down. Almost point by point. He says the population growth is the reason. He says, and this is back in the 80s and 90s, okay? And that's probably what the data was pointing to. Because from what I'm reading today, there's some places I retweeted the other day. Japan. They're not making enough babies. Which I think is part of the whole infertility stuff. I think they've genetically modified the food for increased infertility because they were worried about population growth getting out of control. Anyhow, that's what this is all about. Because after the baby boom, they were studying and confirming exponential increases and doublings of population. And if something wasn't done to stop us animals from recreating, we'd be out of option. You know, you'd have too much pollution. There's not enough fossil fuels or not enough raw materials. And this would be a massive crisis. You know, you're doubling the population. Therefore, you're doubling the burden and the resources required. And mankind would become extinct. A truly global issue. A global issue to be tackled by the globalists, by the elitists, by the finest of mankind to save mankind. Because we're not doing that, right? We're just out here mouth-breathing, listening to podcasts, watching movies. What, are we going to solve how to save mankind? No. Are the superheroes coming? No. The elitists see this and they say, well, we got to be the ones to step in. We got to be the adults in the room. And like I try saying, and I keep getting burned every time I do, I don't know that they're wrong, okay? I don't agree with them. I would like the decency to be spoken the truth to. But not everyone can handle it. So what's a fella to do? I'm not... Okay, anyway. See how sticky this gets real quick. Now, So is population growth getting out of control today? Maybe not. Because you can see countries like Japan that are having problems with people not having enough kids. China, they used to have that one child policy. And from what I recall off the top of my head, that they lifted that. People are not having kids like they used to. So it's not so much of a problem, but they're still presenting it as a problem. And I don't know the right answer. I'm not combing through this data like they are. And here's what it comes down to. Do I trust them? Hell no. Hell no. So no matter what they're saying, like, I don't trust them. I don't know that they're wrong, though. The Club of Rome. This is, again, one of these globalist groups. It's full of the elitists, the elite scientists. And they have the same answer. They were commissioning teams of computer science nerds at MIT to figure out, how do we stop this from happening? We cannot go extinct. He cites a book called Population Bomb as support for that. And from the book, it talks about, if humans had more saintly behavior, we could solve the issues. We need rapid population decline while pursuing a more equitable distribution of food, social justice, etc. They tried population growth, but we rejected it. That's your birth control, your abortions, all that stuff. They could do it through death. They could have wars. That'll keep the population down. This death rate via reduction through pestilence, famine, was one option to keep the population growth down. The problem could have been avoided by population control, in which mankind was responsible enough to consciously adjust their own birth rate so that the death rate solution didn't have to happen. That's what this book is saying. Because you can't get the public to do nothing, right? So, like, on one level, I sympathize with these globalists that I'm like, yeah, I get it. Mankind sucks. I would prefer to think that I'm not part of that problem, and I would want the facts. Give me the facts. I'll figure out what I need to do. This goes back to my extremely controversial stance about the masks. Because here in Utah, they did not mandate it for months and months and months. Governor Sherbert was out here saying, please, please do it. And, you know, and since then, I've been more anti-mask. Like, I wear the thing, but I also, I see enough information now and studies and evidence that I'm like, okay, I don't think they really do anything. I think this is a fugazi. It's a fugazi to make people feel safe to go out and shop, I think, is what it is. Gives them a false illusion of safety, because that's what we do in America. False illusions of safety. TSA. Boom. 9/11 created TSA. Doesn't do nothing. Well, I don't know if it doesn't do nothing. I just remember seeing a study where they said like 90% of weapons got through still or something. Anyway, where were we talking? Oh yeah, the mask. Yeah, so that's what I was saying. Was I was like, look, don't make government be big brother. Don't make them force our hand. You know, it's like work, right? It's like when you go to work at the office. You try to stay on top of your project so that the boss man doesn't have to come down and tell you what to do. Right? Stay ahead of it. And that was my argument for it. It's like, look, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. They're asking us to do it. I know it's the government, and everyone hates the government so much. I get it. Why would we trust people that screw us over so hard sometimes? But this is kind of what Bill Cooper's sentiment was, ironically. Maybe his red pill went deeper into me than I thought. But he's saying that the globalists look at this as, look, you can't help these people. You can tell them what's best for them and they won't even listen. They're out of control. We need to be the ones to step into the room. Daddy needs to come home. And I'm in the camp of like, I don't want Daddy to come home. Don't give Daddy a reason to come home. Now, publicly, they said that food, pollution, natural resources, they're all going to be maxed out in the next 100 years. And that is when the sudden, uncontrollable collapse will happen. The masses will overthrow the governments. There'll be anarchy. people are going to be fighting for the food and the resources. So that's what they want. That's why they want global control. They want a global equilibrium, distributing what is necessary to each person. That's the communist Marxist agenda.
Socialism.
Divvying out only what you need. Exactly what the World Economic Forum 8 points says. Exactly what the Great Reset says. All of this. But I agree with all the truthers that say, here's the problem with that. The rich won't be suffering. The elites are coming up with this plan. They're not going to suffer. It'll be us. Bill Cooper says, we either volunteer or we become slaves, which was ironically my stance with the masks. You either volunteer to do it, or you get directed and mandated to do it. The writing was on the wall, right? They think it helps. I don't know that it helps. I don't think it does anymore. But it's too late for that. And look, there's lots of moral quandaries with that. Like, oh, do we just jump off the cliff because the government says so? Right. I get it. Like, they're just saying to put the mask on. They're not saying jump off a cliff. But it is a slippery slope, right? How far do you take this? Again, a moral quandary. We could go on all day. We could wax philosophically about this all day, but we won't. But Bill Cooper, he says that we have to be the force to push all of these things, or the masters will force it upon us. Another idea, the globalist elitists, they want to live forever, but they want you to die. You hear, I think Jay Dyer says that all the time. He's like, no, Mr. Bond, I want you to die. And that's what Alex Jones says. Yes, they do. They want you to die because of the population growth. It's not a personal thing. Like, they're like, oh, I hate you. You have to die. It's the facts of the matter to these people. They believe this. Like, you can believe it or not all you want. It doesn't matter. You're not in the position. You're not in those offices. You're not in the boardroom of the globalist elites. If they want to believe something works, you better believe that you got to play the game. That's just the nature of how this went down. There's also a little bit of exoneration for the elites, you know? Like, they're honestly giving you a chance, but you're messing it up. So, they, and here's where it sucks, right? And this is human nature. It's like, these guys are hypocrites too. They say, oh, you should share and not use more than you need. Meanwhile, they've been hoarding all the wealth and all the resources, flying in their private jets and unnecessary amounts of wealth and houses. So that's where they're wrong at the same time. And it's a messed up deal. They've manipulated the masses to increase their wealth. Then they tell you that your greed is ruining the planet. But on some level, we have to own our individual rights and make the right choices and see through the lies of the corporations, big oil, big pharma. They're all lying to us. Meanwhile, the world burns, people are getting sicker. I feel like they live the film, and it's like you and the listener and me here, we're Hot Rod and Frank from They Live. We're watching the elites abuse the masses while also seeing the masses allowing it to happen and going right along with it. And I suppose this is why those truthers are so passionate about this stuff, right? So maybe I should take back my COVID derangement syndrome. You know, maybe, you know, because sometimes you dig into this stuff and you do get mad. So I get it, right? I get it. So I suppose this is, maybe I should change my t-shirt logos, the shirts I sell, instead of saying these nerds are going to kill us, I should say these nerds and mouth breathers are going to kill us. Because the masses are compliant in this as well. Now Cooper, he proceeds to lay out all these models that the elites have been analyzing, suggesting they need to do this to us and all this stuff. There's an interesting one where he talks about alternative 3 and a base on the moon and colonizing space and all this stuff.
What's one of the answers? Alternative 3. I also saw documentation, and I've already shown you documentation on slides, that there may have been somebody in the moon in 1958, and I can tell you right now, there is a base on the moon. We are attempting to colonize space because if their attempts to control our greed and our wastefulness and our destruction of this earth do not work, the only hope for the survival of the human race is colonization of other planets. Next. This is verification. I can't tell you who wrote this letter, but it is a letter that was delivered into our hands but this confirms that as far back as 1962, working for the Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena, she was working on photography taken of the moon and Mars from objects that went there. I can tell you that the first landing on Mars of a probe occurred on May the 22nd, 1962, sent back photographs and verified the existence of an atmosphere that could support life. This woman was married to a man, she says in this letter, his function was to design domed modular living facilities, next slide please, for colonies of Earth scientists to be stationed on the moon and then Mars. It was called Project Adam and Eve. We didn't get this letter, ladies and gentlemen, until August of 1989. I had already revealed the presence of a colony on the moon and Mars on July the 2nd, 1989. Okay, next. 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 Report from Iron Mountain on the possibility and desirability of peace. Next. This is really important. Though not yet expressly put forth as the development of a long-range sequence of space research projects with largely unattainable goals, this kind of program offers several advantages lacking in the social welfare model. First, it is unlikely to phase itself out, regardless of the predictable surprises science has in store for us. The universe is too big. In the event some individual project unexpectedly succeeds, there would be no dearth of substitute problems. For example, if colonization of the moon proceeds on schedule, it could then become necessary to establish a beachhead on Mars or Jupiter and so on.
So how curious is that? He's talking about this in the 80s and 90s about how we're trying to go out to space and find another option for survival of human race. And as you know, this is where, Elon Musk is out there promoting this kind of stuff. They're even Bezos, like they're all trying to get out into space. Well, doesn't that make sense as to why they're doing that now? It's not like they're just only fulfilling some nerd sci-fi fantasy. They believe this stuff. Then we talk about water on the moon. He was talking about water on the moon way back then. And if you recall, NASA proved this in some massive announcement in 2020.
Our official NASA photographs taken right out of a NASA publication. I didn't fake them. You can go get the same book and look at them yourself. They told us there's no water on the moon. I guess that doesn't call for any comment, does it? Next.
Yeah, in October 26th, 2020, I'm going to read you from the article. For the first time, water has been confirmed to be present on the sunlit surface of the moon, said Paul Hertz, director of astrophysics, NASA. He said, we had indications that H2O, the familiar water we know, might be present on the sunlit side of the moon. Now we know it's there. This discovery challenges our understanding of the lunar surface and raises intriguing questions about resources relevant for deep space exploration. You see, they're looking into this stuff, right? Seems the writing's on the wall that... And maybe they've got data that we don't. Maybe they know something we don't. Or maybe they're wrong. Who knows? Last clip, and this is very apropos to Bill Cooper. This is a good sentiment. He sums up very well about how we're cattle to them. And they think we're greedy. They think we're selfish. And maybe they're right.
Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars is the first chapter in my book. Once you read that, you will have a complete understanding of what's happening in one very important area. And you will get an understanding of what the elite think of us, the common man, the mass of ordinary, everyday people, which is what most of us really are. We're all special in our own way, but we are a part of the masses of people. They believe that we are cattle, that we do not use our intellect, that we are easily manipulated, that we will not solve the problems of the world because we are greedy scumbags. And because of that, we are nothing but stakes on the table for those who will use their intellect. And until we change that, they're going to treat us like cattle. And I've got to tell you right now, on a daily basis, we prove them right. Next.
So Bill Cooper, one of the greatest truthers of all time, is telling us that a one-world government is inevitable, and the biggest problem he has with it is that they're going to force and manipulate us into it, and that he would rather have a seat at the table than to be forced into this thing. It's almost like he doesn't disagree with them on some levels, which is funny because that's the stance I come up with sometimes. It just depends on which mood you catch me in. He says that the best government ever created was the American government, and it has to be destroyed, and that's a big problem for the globalist. And that he doesn't necessarily disagree with the New World Order, but he would prefer to have some buy-in and know what the plan is and why. Fascinating ideas. And look, again, prophetically, he's saying what old Santa Claus is saying about how America needs to be brought down. It's on the 8 points. You heard that on Great Reset Part 3 about the 8 points and about how America will no longer be a global superpower, which sounds like that couldn't possibly be true. They wouldn't possibly advertise that, but that's what it said. So there you go, that's a very short look at Bill Cooper and his ideas on the one world government, the globalist agenda. The rest of that 4 or 5 hour presentation, he's talking about prophecies of the end times, the book of Revelation, getting people to give stuff up. He talks about Richard Doty, Bob Lazar, Willie Strieber, they're all intelligence agents. Fascinating stuff, right? And then one more interesting idea he floats is how private property needs to be abolished, and they want the socialist utopia government everywhere globally, right? You already know this. And he says that we're going to have these cashless systems with a card or a chip in the hand, and they're going to remove large bills from circulation and then smaller bills. And look, that's what happened with 2020. That's what happened with COVID. That's what they did. And they're already talking about trying to introduce a cryptocurrency. So again, this guy was ahead of his time, and I agree with a lot of the stuff he says. I think he's definitely on point with a lot of this stuff. All right, thanks for listening. You've made it through. You're now, if you're a supporter on Patreon or Rockfin, again, link in the show notes. Check it out. I think that'll be worth the price of admission for either of those options, and they each have different flavors as to what you want. Rockfin, you get access to my second podcast and all the other creators as well for one fee. Patreon, you get access to a community, you get some free ebooks. You know, the choice is yours, my friend. But yeah, check them out. You got to sign up so you can get part 2 and 3, where we discuss the fourth industrial revolution with the transhuman movement, how Crowley fits into all that. And then we talk about your boy Jay Dyer with the 8 economic. World Economic Forum points, and how he was right. It turns out, it sounds crazy, but he was right. All right, thanks for your time. Check out those support systems, and until next time, stay woke.